Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today we're off to the police station. And we don't have to go in handcuffs this time. We're just going to visit. We're going to visit and listen to an episode of The Police Blotter. This is from 1957, Murder on the Fourth Floor.
Tonight, Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters.
Name?
Jenny Reynolds.
Address?
1121 Dorchester.
Charge? Murder.
The heritage that you and I share as Americans has been given to us by many great men, men such as Meriwether Lewis and William Clark. The winter of 1804 was a hard one. Gusts of snow whirled around horses and men that made up the Lewis and Clark expedition. Doggedly, they pushed westward across the plains of the newly organized Iowa Territory and through the Rocky Mountains. Day after day, Clark noted watersheds and trails while Lewis sketched them in on the map. Two more winters passed before they returned, but they had reached the Pacific and claimed the vast, sprawling Louisiana Territory for the United States. They had opened up a whole new country for those who would follow. Their courage helped to build your America. It's part of your American heritage.
Good evening. This is Dirk Fredericks, your host for Police Blotter, authentic dramas of police work and the constant battle that goes on night and day against crime. Tonight, Police Blotter brings to life an exciting story dealing with a phase of the theatrical world. So listen now as Murder on the Fourth Floor on Police Blotter.
I'm Brad Peters, Sergeant, Homicide. You ever been inside a police station? The phone rings, might be anything from disturbing the peace to murder. Whatever or whoever it is, rich or poor, innocent or guilty, sooner or later I get to know them all. Sergeant Peters, Homicide.
Howdy, Sergeant. I got a case for you. A genuine case.
What is it?
Murder. Just plain murder. You better come up here and take a look at the body.
Where are you?
1406th Street. You take your elevator, you get off on the fourth floor, and then you go down the hall to room 48. I'll be waiting inside for you.
What's your name?
Roy Downs. Come over right away, because I can't stay here long.
I'll be right over, Roy. Just stay put. Room 48, according to the printed letters on the door, was the office of Marvin Jackson, casting agent. As I approached it, the door opened.
Oh, howdy.
A 6-foot cowboy in buckskin pants, fancy embroidered blouse, and a 10-gallon hat motioned to me to come in.
Well, I'm glad to see your kind of prompt, Sergeant.
Where's the body?
Well, this here is what they call the outer office. Now, behind that door there is a private office. You'll find him in there.
All right, come along.
Yeah. Well, what for? I seen him already. You ain't afraid of a corpse, are you, Sergeant?
I just want your company.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll be glad to oblige. Yeah, that's the way I found him. Sitting behind his desk with his head down like he was taking a nap.
Mm-hmm. How did you know he was dead?
Well, I went over and touched him on the shoulder. When he didn't move, I shook him. And then his head fell back. He was shot through the heart.
Is that Marvin Jackson?
Seen nobody else. He can't see a word now, but you should have heard him when he was alive.
the smoothest talker I ever met up with. Why, he could talk an Indian out of his tomahawk.
Did you do any business with him?
Well, not yet, but he kept promising he'd make me another Will Rogers, you know, swinging a lariat and chewing gum and saying funny things, you know, like everybody's always talking about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, in fact, now, I give him $200 to get a feller to write me those funny things. And then he was going to book me in a show.
Well, it looks like you lost out.
Well, that's what made me come up here. I was getting tired of being put off. I made up my mind he was going to give me that booking or give me my money back.
You quarreled with him?
Well, didn't have a chance. When I walked into his private office, he was dead.
Uh-huh. I imagine you're a pretty good shot.
Oh, hey, now, don't you go planting this on me. You can search me. I don't carry guns.
Could have tossed it out the window.
Now, that's just why I didn't walk out of here. I didn't want to be suspected. If someone saw me, they'd sure tell the police I did the smart thing.
Maybe.
Oh, now, look here.
Was anybody in this office when you came in?
It was empty.
How about his secretary?
Well, he runs this office all by himself. The show people sit in the outer office, and he calls them in one at a time.
Then there's no one to prove that he was dead before you came in, huh?
No. Hey, wait a minute. I just remembered.
What?
When I came off the elevator and walked down the hall, a girl came out of Jackson's office.
Do you know her?
No.
What did she look like? Tall or short? Fat, thin, young or old?
Oh, she was a young'un.
All right, what was she wearing?
Oh, I can't remember.
Roy, are you making this up?
No, I give you my word. I saw the girl coming out of Jackson's office. I did.
You don't remember a single thing about her?
Well, yeah. I guess I do.
What is it?
She had the prettiest legs I ever seen. In New York.
I couldn't get any more out of Roy Downs. I decided to let him go. I told him not to leave town. I called the coroner. Then I searched Marvin Jackson's desk. Found a book listing his clients' names, telephone numbers. There were more than 100. It would take a year to investigate. On his desk, there was a daily calendar. On today's date, there was a notation. Juliana, theater. I went through his address book, and I found only one Juliana. That was under the M's. Juliana Montaigne. But before paying her a visit, I decided to check with the elevator men in Jackson's building. No one remembered taking down a girl from the fourth floor at the approximate time of the murder. But if Roy was telling the truth, the girl could have walked down the stairs. And the description was worthless. I headed for the fashionable district where Juliana Montaigne lived.
Oh, the police?
May I come in, Miss Montaigne?
Oh, how rude of me, of course.
Thank you.
I'm not accustomed to visits from the police.
I came to see you about Marvin Jackson.
Oh, is he in trouble again? I'll call my lawyer and have him bailed out.
Well, that's not quite possible.
Don't be silly. I can afford it. Perhaps you don't remember me, Sergeant. Doesn't the name Juliana Montaigne mean anything to you? I was a star when I was 20. Musical comedy. Retired now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we must get Marvin out. We're going to the theater this evening.
So I gathered from his desk calendar.
Such a dear boy. He knows how to cater to a woman. Order the best food and the best wine, you know.
And you pick up the check, huh?
Certainly. I do so enjoy his company.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Montaigne. You won't be enjoying his company anymore. Marvin has been shot. Killed.
Oh, dear. No, that's... terrible, simply terrible. I was so looking forward to this evening. It was to be a sort of reunion.
Reunion?
You see, we had quarreled. He said he needed money. He wanted me to lend it to him, and I refused.
He came to you for money to pay off someone else?
Well, I didn't care about that. I never expected to get back what I loaned him. But he had broken his last two appointments with me. I found there was a young girl involved.
What was her name?
Gloria.
Mm-hmm. His second name?
I don't know.
He had been dating her?
Yes. I told him, frankly, if he didn't give her up, he'd get no more help from me.
And he gave her up?
So he said. That's why I bought the theater tickets. We were going to celebrate.
Miss Montaigne, have you any idea to whom he owed that money?
Not at all. But if that's why he died, then I'll never forgive myself for not helping him. You will try to find poor Marvin's murderer.
Yes, that's our business.
Of course. Oh, Sergeant.
Yes, Miss Montaigne.
It's a shame to have the theater tickets go to waste. Perhaps you'd care to be my guest?
Thanks, but I'm busy tonight. Goodbye, Miss Montaigne. Juliana didn't strike me as the type who would be jealous enough to kill. I decided to check on her story about Gloria. I went back to Marvin's office. I checked his black book. I found four Glorias listed, and I called the numbers. One was out of town with a show. One had gone back to Indiana. Another was working in the department store. And the fourth, Gloria Clinton, was at home. So I went over. She was a dark-haired girl, about 18.
Yes?
Are you Gloria Clinton?
That's my stage name. My real name is Gloria Beagle.
Uh-huh. What show are you in?
I'm not working now, but my agent's negotiating for a part in a new show.
Marvin Jackson, your agent?
How do you know?
Well, I found your name in his book.
You must have hundreds of names there.
When did you see Marvin last?
3 days ago. He asked me to meet him at a hotel. We went dining and dancing. We went to the Scarlet Slipper Club and we drank real champagne.
Who paid the check?
Well, he did, of course. I told him he didn't have to take me to such expensive places.
Gloria, was that your first date with him?
He took me out twice before, always to some fancy place.
You sure you weren't in his office today? Answer my question, Gloria.
No, I wasn't. He told me not to bother coming up. He said as soon as he got news about the new show, he'd call me. Is anything wrong?
Well, you better get yourself another agent. Marvin Jackson is dead.
Dead? He had an accident?
He was shot.
Shot? Well, who did it?
We don't know yet. But a cowboy saw a girl come out of Jackson's office. Girl with pretty legs. That description could fit you, Gloria.
Thank you. I mean, about having pretty legs. That's when Marvin sure he'd get me in a show, but I haven't been near his office for weeks.
Did he by any chance tell you that he owed somebody $500?
No, all we talked about was show business.
Mm-hmm. Gloria, what shows have you been in so far?
None.
You ever been on the stage?
No, sir.
Where you from, Gloria?
Alabama.
Been long in town?
About 3 months.
Did you give Marvin Jackson any money to get you a job?
Now, why should I do that? He's supposed to get me a job for free, and then I pay him 10%.
Okay, Gloria. I may get in touch with you again.
What for?
You never know. Leaving Gloria, I had the same reaction as when I left Juliana. Gloria sounded innocent enough, but many a person with a face like a cherub is a murderer. At the station house the next day, I got a call from Juliana. Said she had some important information. I went up to see her.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I couldn't give you that information over the telephone.
Why not?
I just happen to value my life.
I don't get it.
Haven't you heard of wires being tapped?
Oh, I don't think you need worry about that. Well?
Remember my mentioning the fact that Marvin wanted me to lend him some money? $1,000?
Yeah, and you turned him down?
Yes. I know now why he needed the money.
Why?
To pay off a debt. He gambled, you know.
Who did he owe it to?
Frankie Hines, a racketeer.
Frankie Hines was a known muscle man, smooth operator. He hired the best mouthpieces, gave us the laugh when he beat the rap. Frankie had a suite of rooms in an office building downtown. The sign on his door said Frank Hines,
construction consultant. I told the girl I wanted to see him. A few minutes later, she ushered me into his private office. He was dressed to the hilt, big grin on his face.
Sergeant. Well, it's nice to have the police come in with their problems.
You might know the answer to this one, Frankie.
Always glad to cooperate.
You ever hear of a man named Marvin Jackson?
Marvin? Sure, I know Marvin. Gets me tickets for shows.
You ever play cards with him?
Sometimes. He's a scared gin rummy player.
What did he lose last time?
Oh, about 1,000. I blitzed him a couple of times.
When he couldn't pay, you blitzed him again. For good.
I don't need money that bad.
You let him have it right through the heart. Bingo.
Such language, Sergeant. I'll prove it to you. Kenny! Kenny?
Who's Kenny?
One of my boys, Kenny Reynolds.
You call me?
This is Sergeant Brad Peters. He wants some information.
About what?
Marvin Jackson. You're going to give it to him.
Wait, I don't get you, Mr. Hines.
Were you in the office here when Marvin Jackson came up to pay me some money?
Oh, sure.
Let me take over, Frankie.
Go ahead, be the D.A.
Kenny, how much money did Marvin Jackson give Frankie?
$950.
There you are. I've got a witness to prove he paid the debt.
Was it a check?
He gave Frankie 9 C notes and a 50.
Anything else you want to know, Sergeant?
Yeah. Would you have any idea who would want to bump off Marvin Jackson?
Nope. You come to the wrong place.
A girl came out of his office right after it happened. Do you know any girl who was sore at him?
He was quite a chaser.
This one had very pretty legs.
Well, one sure thing couldn't be my secretary. Sorry, you won't find anything here. This is a legitimate business office with homely secretaries.
Every lead ended up at a stone wall. I'd have to check every name in Marvin Jackson's book. As I thumbed through the pages, wondering where to start, the phone rang in the station house. Sergeant Peters, homicide.
Well, howdy, Sergeant. I got another case for you.
Who are you?
Well, don't you remember? I'm Roy Downs, a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. You are? What is it this time?
Just plain murder. You better come up here and take a look at the body.
Where are you?
Well, the address is 59 Quincy Street. I'll be waiting for you, Sergeant.
Hello, Roy.
Well, you came right fast.
How do you happen to be here?
I live here. I guess there's actors living in every room of this house. Just follow me.
Okay.
There she is.
Gloria Clinton.
You know her?
I spoke to her yesterday.
She was shot right through the heart.
You said the same thing when we looked at Marvin Jackson's body.
So I did, come to think of it.
Did you know her?
I never had the pleasure.
But you lived in the same house?
Oh, we just never met.
Were you the first to discover the body?
No, sir. It was a girl who lived in the next apartment. She screamed so loud, we all came running out. And when I saw what happened, I told him to leave it to me. I told him you were a personal friend of mine. Well, she went into this Gloria's room to borrow some bobby pins and found her this way, dead. I figured you'd want me to question her, so I did.
Oh, yeah. You're being very helpful, Roy.
I got something else to tell you, Sergeant.
What is it?
Take a good look at Gloria's legs.
What about them?
Ain't they the prettiest legs you ever seen?
What are you driving at?
Look, I got a feeling that those were the legs I seen coming out of Marvin Jackson's office. Yes, sir. I recognize them red shoes.
It seemed a strange coincidence that Roy Downs should be present immediately after both murders. After sending for the coroner and leaving a patrolman in charge, I took Roy down to the station. I questioned him for hours, but I couldn't shake his story. The report came in from ballistics. The bullet that killed Marvin Jackson and the bullet that killed Gloria Clinton were fired from the same gun. So if Gloria was the girl who came out of Jackson's office, she must have found him dead when she got there. Why did she deny seeing him? Why was she murdered, too? I went back to search her apartment. Found a pack of letters
Alabama postmarks. One in particular interested me. It read, "Dear Gloria, so glad to hear that you're not lonesome anymore. That young man you wrote about, Kenny Reynolds, he sounds like a real nice young man. I wish you would send me a picture of him. All my love, Mother." Kenny Reynolds was that young punk I met in Frankie Hines' office. It'd be a real pleasure to talk to him again. I started over to Hines' place. As I neared the office building, I saw Kenny approaching a taxi that was idling at the curb. I shouted at the top of my voice, "Hey, Kenny! Wait a minute!" He turned his head, recognized me, and jumped into the taxi. And off it went. Another cab drove up to take that spot in front of the building, and I jumped in. I told the driver to follow Kenny's cab. Chased him for more than a mile, down one street, up another. Then he turned a corner. By the time we reached there, Kenny's taxi was at the curb. Kenny was running into an alley. I jumped out of my chair. "Stop, Kenny, or I'll shoot!" I fired in the air, and Kenny didn't stop. I ran after him. It was into the warehouse he went. And it took a few seconds to get accustomed to the darkness. "Why did you run, Kenny? I got a few questions for you about Gloria."
"You'll never get me!"
"Drop your gun, Kenny. I'm out of there with your hands up."
"Don't make me laugh."
"You've got to get closer."
"Shut up!"
"You like to drill them through the heart, don't you?"
"I'll get you the same way, copper."
"Like you did Marvin and Gloria? Kenny, I'm coming after you."
"Come on!"
I stepped behind a stack of barrels piled on top of one another. I held my gun in one hand, and with the other I toppled them. As I expected, Kenny fired. I watched for the flash of his gun, and then I pulled the trigger.
"My arm! My arm!"
Kenny was on the ground, holding his arm.
"Get a doctor! I'm bleeding to death!"
"Oh, you won't die so easy."
"Hey, where are you going?"
"I got your gun."
"Call a doctor! A doctor! Do something for me! I'm bleeding to death!"
"Like all the punks,
please.
You can't take it, huh? Come on your feet, Kenny boy. We'll patch you up nice and pretty for the trial." "Name?"
"Kenny Reynolds."
"The address?"
1121 Dorchester.
"Charge? Murder." At the trial, Kenny admitted he had given Marvin Jackson $1,000 to advance Gloria's career on the stage. When Marvin failed to get her a part, Kenny demanded his money back. Marvin laughed at the idea, so Kenny killed him. Knowing Kenny's intentions, Gloria went to Marvin's office to warn him. But she was a little too late. And Kenny feared that Gloria might report him to the police. So he killed her, too. Jury brought in a verdict of guilty of murder in the first degree. Kenny paid the penalty. Signed, Sergeant Brad Peters, homicide.
You have just heard Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters. The cast included Roger DeCoven, Peter Fernandez, Elaine Rost, Nancy Sheridan, and Lawson Zerbe. Tonight's drama, Murder on the Fourth Floor, was written by Ed Ettinger and directed by Clark Andrews.
And speaking of police, Charlie McCarthy's in trouble again, this time for stealing. Let's listen in.
"Oh, if I had the wings of an angel..."
"Yes, yes, Charlie. Please. That's nothing to sing about. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. A boy your age with a jail record."
"Just call me number 77682.
"Let's hope this incident doesn't get into the newspapers. Think of my standing in the community.
Let's face it, Bergen. Your standing's already down to a squatting position.
Think of it. My boy in jail.
Let's not call it jail. I like to think of it as a home away from home.
Yes. Charlie, if you will tell me exactly what happened, I promise not to punish you.
Oh, you do love to set those booby traps for me, don't you? Well, I'll tell you, Bergie. You see, a policeman went in for a cup of coffee and left his motorcycle standing outside with the radio on, you see?
Yes, I see. And?
A call came over saying a girl was locked out of her house, dressed only in her nightie, you see. Yes.
So you told the motor cop about it?
No, I did not. I said to myself, I heard the call first, she's mine.
Oh, no.
She sounded like my type.
Yeah. From that brief description?
No, from her brief attire.
Oh, I see. Well, so?
So, I felt it was my duty to take the motorcycle and investigate.
When you're tempted like that, Charlie, you should always say, get thee behind me, Satan.
I did. And he got on the jump seat and we rode off together. Oh, the siren was on and the throttle was open. Oh, gay life here. We rode through red, green, and yellow lights so fast, I thought I was in the Aurora Boris Karloff.
Yes. Oh, no, Charlie, that was wrong. Why didn't you listen to your conscience?
Well, I couldn't. I was going faster than sound.
Oh. Well, just how fast were you going? What did the speedometer hand show?
It showed nothing. It was too busy holding on.
Oh, stop.
And then I heard the cops coming. So I hid behind a billboard.
That was the wrong thing to do.
Oh, it certainly was. Another cop was already hiding there. Yeah. Why, the stinker.
All right, yeah. Then you were trapped.
Yeah, he dragged me off my motorcycle, slapped handcuffs on me. So I decided there was only one thing to do.
What was that?
Turn myself in.
Oh, I say, Edgar and Charles, I don't want to be inquisitive or nosy.
Well, then why are you?
No, but I've just heard the most wizard piece of gossip.
Oh?
Yeah, is it true that Charles is a jail fowl?
Jail fowl, yeah. Shake hands with number 77682.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can call me by my nick number, 77.
All right. Oh, but no, really, Charles, you shocked me.
Yeah.
Did you have a good reason for being in jail?
The best. The door was locked.
Yeah.
Ray, did you ever do any time?
Did I ever do what any time?
Yeah. Oh, forget it. I got some advice for you, Ray.
Yeah?
If there's ever a price on your head...
Yes?
Take it.
Charlie, you're treating this entirely too lightly. After all, do you want to be a criminal?
Oh, I don't know. What's your proposition?
Oh, no. Do you realize that this cost me $20 to bail you out?
Well, you're a sucker for paying it. Yeah. They would have let me go anyway. They said I was a bad influence on the other criminals. All right.
Charlie McCarthy from 1954. Let's indulge in some more crime with the adventures of Sam Spade. This time, Sam's in the hot water with the hot 100 grand caper from 1948. Let's listen.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
This is Sam, Blackleg Spade, the third most dangerous gambler on the Barbary Coast.
Oh, Sam, not horses again.
Horses, women, and the gaming tables, Evie, the diversions of the elite.
Well, divert yourself with this, Sam. The phone company has sent the pink notice.
Uh-huh. Pay it no mind, sweetheart. We are healed. We have hit the cashier's cage, annexed the pot, broken the bank, and we're standing on velvet.
Sam, are you sober?
Definitely velvet. Warm, too.
Sam, from where are you calling from?
You're wrong, Effie. It's a drugstore. Stay where you are. I'll be right down to deal out my report on the Hot 100 Grand Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. It's smart to buy things the whole family can use, isn't it? That's why I say it's smart to buy Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. To mom, to dad, to the children, Wild Root Cream Oil is really a friend indeed. Non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil with lanolin grooms the hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose, ugly dandruff. I hope you have a big family-sized bottle of Wild Root Cream Oil in your home. Get Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Date, September 19, 1948, to robbery detail, San Francisco Police. Attention, Sergeant Walsh. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596, Dear Joe. Here's the rundown on that Hot 100 Grand. It started pleasantly enough when my secretary, Miss Effie Perrine, cute little mouse, eased into my private office, closed the door behind her, and leaned back against it with that air of pained resignation which generally means there's a customer outside that she doesn't approve of, but that I'll see her anyway.
It's up to you, Sam. She's very well dressed, and I imagine she can afford you.
How do you deduce that?
Well, she dropped her purse. I didn't get time to count it all, but there was a $100 bill on top.
Well, show her in, Effie.
Sam.
Go ahead, say it.
Oh, I don't know, Sam. Sometimes, well, there's just money.
No. No, that's one of the reasons I hire you. What's the matter with it?
Nothing. That's just it, Sam. She's very good-looking, cultivated, and very kind and considerate. And she seems sincerely troubled.
You mean her act is a little too good?
I felt that too, Sam.
Thanks, Angel. I'll keep that in mind. Tell her to come in.
All right, Sam. Mr. Spade will see you, Mrs. Kilcoyne.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing me, Mr. Spade.
My pleasure. Won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you. I'm Lorraine Kilcoyne, Mr. Spade. It's about my husband, Leonard Kilcoyne.
Husband? Oh.
We've only been married a short time. It was a quiet ceremony at the San Cedro Mission. Mm-hmm. Leonard didn't want to subject me to any publicity. The difference in our ages, you know?
You mean you want me to keep it a secret?
Oh, no. No, except for the newspapers, of course. Naturally, all of Leonard's friends know.
Well, he doesn't have many, from what I've heard.
I've thought it strange, too, that such a prominent man should have such a small circle of acquaintances. I met him only a short time before I married him. He's been very kind and absolutely devoted to me, and I suppose I should feel ashamed of myself for coming to you. But there are so many things about him that are mysterious that I can't seem to find my handkerchief.
Here. Kleenex.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I take it you're not a San Francisco girl.
No. No, I met him at a dude ranch.
Well, maybe I can clear up some of your mysteries for free. The reason your husband doesn't have many friends is because they keep dropping dead.
I don't understand you.
Forget it. He's a big public servant. He's built a lot of sidewalks. The streets of this city are paved with his good intentions. His name is on 1,000 manhole covers. If the names of his former business associates land on headstones, it's nothing to me. I got my own racket. Well, what?
I think my husband is paying blackmail to someone.
Uh-huh. And upon what do you base your suspicions, Mrs. Kay?
It started about a month ago. He began withdrawing large sums from our joint account. First, it was $10,000, then $20,000, and last week, $50,000. Mm-hmm. And this morning, he closed out the balance of the account, $100,000.
Yeah, well, he's got it to spend, Mrs. Kilcoyne.
Well, I won't pretend the money doesn't interest me, but what's behind it, Mr. Spade? Each time he withdraws these cash sums, he leaves the house without a word to me. And sometimes doesn't return until dawn. My husband is not fond of nightlife, Mr. Spade. Only a desperate situation could induce him to leave the house after dark.
Yeah, so I've heard. They say that's how he kept his health as long as he has. All right, you want me to trail him, find out what he does with the money. Just one question. Why'd you pick me for the job?
Why, your reputation...
That's local. You say you're new in San Francisco.
Well, I do read the local papers. Your picture was in only 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that caper didn't help my reputation.
I like your looks. A nice, honest face. A man I could trust.
Well, don't buy that.
And I'm sentimental, too. Your picture reminded me of someone who was very dear to me. My brother. Of course, you're nothing like him, really, but you do look alike. I suppose that sounds like a silly woman's reason for...
Yeah. What's your address?
Well, I have a little place of my own out on Divisadero. The Balboa Apartments near Normandy Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
You'd better keep in touch with me there. I don't want Leonard to know. The Kilcourse Mansion is at 1316 Clarendon.
1316. Mm-hmm.
He returns from his office around 6 in the evening. Do you have a car?
No. I need one?
Well, I don't know where he may go. Now, here are the keys to my car. It's parked in front of the main entrance, a gray Plymouth. He won't recognize the car. It's my brother's. Now, about your fee.
$100 now. If I need more, I'll leave you now. I had an uneasy feeling I would need more. The last detective that tried to follow Leonard Kilcourse had hospital insurance. I don't. But I'm a gambler at heart, so I parked Lorraine's Plymouth across the street from the Kilcourse mansion and waited. At 9 in the p.m., Mr. Kilcourse, much, much too old for her, came out the front door and flagged down a taxi. I made an illegal U-turn and followed. The trail ended across the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County. It was a country club-type building on top of a hill overlooking the bay. It did business under the name of Ernie Nogales' Racket Club. The racket had nothing to do with tennis. It came from two sources. The moans and groans of the customers losing money at the roulette wheels and crap tables, and the glad hand the management threw at my quarry as I followed him in.
Well, Mr. Kilcourse, surprised to see you. Since when you go out on the dock?
Well, I thought a little nightlife might agree with me, Nogales.
Oh, that sounds like you, Mr. Kilcourse. I didn't know you better. I think you was afraid to go out night.
Well, now, I was thinking of buying this place to retire to.
Ah.
But I figured it'd be cheaper to win it at your roulette table. What's your limit here?
10,000, but for you, wide open, the sky.
A hot $100,000 for a starter?
Well, any time they catch you with hot money, Mr. Kilcourse. Come over to the cashier. I sell you the chips myself.
I didn't have to bother making myself inconspicuous. Everybody in the joint stopped playing to watch Kilcourse while he shoved his $100,000 roll through the cashier's window and scooped up 4 stacks of 1,000-buck chips.
Make your bets, please.
All right, you, spin that wheel.
Huh? How much you got there?
$25,000. Any objections?
Is that okay, Mr. Nogales?
Spin it, Joe. I'm covering through the table personally.
Okay, sir. Around and round the little ball goes. 15 pays, 15 and the red.
Maybe next time, Mr. Kilcourse. Why don't you double up, play the red and the black? It's safer.
I'll stay with the numbers. 50,000 on 15. There, spin it.
It's okay, Joe. I'm still covering.
Well, it's your money, Mr. Nogales. Number 4 pays. Number 4 and the red again.
Well, $25,000 more on 15.
Look, Mr. Kilcourse, go on, enjoy yourself, take it off your income tax, but please spread them out a little there, those chips, huh? It looks bad for the house.
What kind of a joint is this? Can't you cover the bets?
Okay, Joe. He asked for it.
Okay, sir.
I didn't wait to see where the little ball went on the last spin of the wheel. I would have made a side bet with any taker that Kilcourse wanted to lose that $100,000. I would also have made book he knew I was following him. As I left the table and walked out of the club, I braced myself for what usually comes next. There would either be a dead body in the car or somebody would crease my noggin with a sap. But nothing happened. I switched on the headlights and stood in the glare of them for fully a minute, but nobody even shot at me. I flushed the shrubbery. No gunman. Check the ignition wires. No booby traps. Driving back to town, I racked my brain for some way to bring them out into the open. I felt like a man with his life savings all on one number, waiting for the wheel to stop spinning, which wasn't far from the truth. Not much of a cliffhanger, but the best we could do this week.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too. And mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. And now, back to the hot 100 grand caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Yeah?
This Mrs. Kilcourse's apartment?
Yeah.
She here?
Yeah.
Well, can I come in?
Yeah.
Tommy?
Yeah.
Who is that, Mr. Spade?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the detective I was telling you about, Tommy, remember?
Yeah.
The one who looked so much like you?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, excuse me, this is my brother, Tommy Lane.
Yeah, I mean,
Tommy, won't you run down to the corner and buy me some cigarettes for about 20 minutes? I have something to talk over with Mr. Spade.
Yeah.
Nice boy, your brother. Small vocabulary, but big feet.
Well, he's shy. Now, what did you find out about my husband, Mr. Spade?
He dropped 100 grand in a gambling joint. Ernie Nogales' racket club. You know it?
No, but I know Ernie Nogales. I knew him in Reno before I met Leonard. He lost his license there for running a crooked wheel.
The way Kilcourse was playing tonight, that wheel didn't have to be crooked. He was trying to lose that 100 grand.
But why? Why would he do a thing like that?
One of two reasons. Either he's paying off to Nogales or he's paying off to somebody else, and Nogales is the go-between.
Well, I don't believe it. Ernie is a crooked gambler, but he doesn't touch blackmail.
And your husband isn't stupid enough to drop 100 grand in 3 turns of a wheel. Anyway, I'm not tangling with him and or the Ernie Nogales mob for $100 of your money or anybody else's. Here, take it.
Well,
and here are your car keys.
No, wait, please. You can't desert me now.
Why not?
Well, I haven't told you everything. I'd hoped I wouldn't have to.
About your brother?
How did you know?
The only place you get a green suntan is in a pokey. Besides, he acts kind of stir-crazy. Spent a little time in solitary, didn't he?
He won't talk about it. But that's it, Sam. That's why Leonard is paying that blackmail money to Nogales.
You just said Nogales wouldn't touch blackmail. Any other corrections you'd like to make in your copy before we proceed?
Yes. Well, I might as well tell you everything.
Why not?
I knew when I came to you this morning that my husband was paying this money to Nogales. I knew because I asked him to.
You and Ernie Nogales are working together?
I'm not that rotten.
I didn't say you were, but you're a rotten liar. There's that much in your favor.
But I'm telling the truth now, Sam. You must believe me. Everything that has happened is my fault. I persuaded Nogales to give my brother a job in his place in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
They quarreled, and when he got closed down, he blamed Tommy. He swore he'd kill him when he got out of prison. That's why I begged my husband to pay him to save Tommy's life.
Who did rat on Nogales about that crooked wheel in Reno?
I did. That's why I feel responsible. Leonard is so fine, so generous. But I can't let him go on paying for my mistake.
Yeah, like you said, he's going to run out of money.
Look at me, Sam. Do I look like the kind of a woman to whom money means everything in the world?
No, but you're looking at me, not at Kilcourse.
You're laughing at me. Oh, I know what you think. Perhaps I did make a mistake in marrying Leonard, but he was so kind, so considerate, like my father.
Everybody reminds you of your relatives.
You don't believe my story?
Well, since you ask.
Well, all right, then, here's the truth. I'm really Jack the Ripper's granddaughter. My parents were terribly wealthy. I harpooned my mother in her Beverly Hills swimming pool, set fire to my father with a $50,000 negotiable bond, and eloped with John Wilkes Booth. That brings us up to 1865. Shall I go on?
Don't stop. It's great.
Oh, get out of here. Get out of here and leave me alone.
After you've told me all your secrets, I'm not that rotten.
You won't help me. You never intended to. Why go on torturing?
Oh, now, stop that. Please, please. I believe you. I believe all your stories. Now, what is my next smart move?
Sam, the only way to stop Ernie Nogales is to prove that he's running a crooked wheel. And then he'd pay back all that blackmail money, and he wouldn't dare lay a hand on Tommy.
Well, it's going to be hard to prove and expensive. Oh, but I'll have to lose a little on that wheel before I can figure the way it's rigged. How much can you invest?
Well, I have about $1,000 of my own.
With you?
Yes. Here, you take it.
Smells nice.
Sam.
Yeah?
Sam, after all this is over, and after I've put things to right with Leonard, I should have told him before this, but I owed him so much, I... Oh, Sam, I'm so glad it's you.
Yeah. Me too, Angel.
Go now, darling, before I beg you not to.
What time does that joint close?
Well, it runs all night, I think.
Good. Let's stay up late and raid the icebox. Around 2 in the a.m., when I low-geared the Plymouth up the long, steep driveway to Ernie Nogales' racket club, backed into the parking space nearest the road with a car headed downhill for a quick getaway just in case, and I went in. The joint was still going full blast. I bought $500 worth of chips, swaggered over to the table where Kilcourse had dropped his $100,000, and nonchalantly flipped the blue chip onto the red.
Appalachia, you betcha, ladies and gentlemen. Make your game. Okay, that's all. Around and round the little ball goes.
I didn't look to see where the little ball went. Most of the money was on red, so it was bound to turn up black.
A red pays.
What?
Number 15. Place your bets, please. Make your game, ladies and gentlemen. Around and round goes.
The chips were spread around more the next turn, so I stacked 100 at the bottom of the 1 to 34 column. With a crooked wheel, my 100 made it the best bet to lose.
And 19, and the red wins again.
Hey! I plunked 500 down on number 5 and raked in 17,500. I left my original bet on the table. When the little ball fell into the pocket, I was $35,000 to the good from my point of view, but not from my client's. I doubled my bet and looked apprehensively around. There were no surly characters edging up behind me. In fact, the only surly character in sight was Ernie Nogales, and he looked happy. That didn't make much sense. When my bankroll got to $105,000, I played a hunch. I threw $5,000 of it back on the table and lost it. That made a kind of sense. I cashed in the rest of my chips and squeezed the $100,000 U.S. currency into my inside pocket. If anybody aimed for my heart, it was thick enough to stop the slug, which was some comfort. But what I saw when I walked out to the parking lot was no comfort at all. I'd gotten just a glimpse of it through some trees. A sedan backed into a driveway halfway down the hill. It was blacked out except for 5 glowing cigar ends that showed through the windows. I could think of only one reason for 5 cigar smokers to be parked in that particular spot at that particular moment. The Plymouth was where I had parked it, pointing straight down the hill. I slammed the door but didn't get in. Then I listened. The car down the hill was getting ready, too. I cracked the door of the Plymouth wide enough to get my arm inside and pressed the starter with the heel of my hand. I switched on the lights, pushed the clutch with my left hand, used my right to shift it into low. Then I pulled the hand throttle out all the way and let it go.
Thank you.
a big idea busting into my office.
We're going to have a talk now, Gallus.
Please, don't wave that heater at me. It makes me nervous. I don't like guns.
I don't either. That's why I'm here. Put your hands on top of the desk and keep them there.
All right. Give me back that roll. I give you clean money for it. It was a gamble, so I lost. Can you blame me?
Where'd you get this money?
I buy it. 50 cents on the dollar. I don't ask where it came from, but I read the papers. I figure it was that shipyard payroll job a few days back. Like it just fell in my lap. I figured it'd make 50 grand instead of Kilcourse 5. I guess that was dirty trick you just out of stir, Tommy, huh?
I had news for you, Nogales. I didn't know this money was hot, and I am not Tommy Lane.
No? Then what?
Private Dick. Tommy's sister hired me to take the fall for him. Look, I got most of the caper. Kilcourse wanted to pay Tommy 100 grand. You rigged the wheel so Kilcourse would lose it one night and Tommy would win it back the next night. Now, what was Kilcourse paying him off for?
No caper, legitimate. He was sent up for bribing a public official.
You mean he was the payoff man for Kilcourse's contracting firm?
Sure, legitimate business. The grand jury went out after Kilcourse. Tommy took the rap, that's all, for a price.
Yeah, 100 grand. Thanks, Nogales. That's all I needed.
Oh, Sam, I was afraid I might be too late.
You are, sweetheart.
Oh, I have so many things to explain. Where can you talk?
Right in here.
But who's this man?
Why, that's your old sweetie from Reno, Ernie Nogales, remember?
What's the matter with you two? You crazy?
Oh, Sam, I should have told you the truth from the beginning.
Check. The Nogales yarn, I can understand. But why did you tell me you were Kilcourse's wife?
I was desperate. I had to say something. It was the only explanation I could think of for my interest in this case without telling the truth.
But you were making a pigeon out of me.
I don't know about such things, Sam. All I know is I'm here in time to warn you. You mustn't walk out of here with that money.
Listen.
They may kill you to get it back.
They already did. They're combing the wreckage of that car right now, looking for my body.
Then Tommy was right. They did mean to kill him.
How'd he get the rumble?
While he was in prison, from another man that Kilcourse framed. He was in for life, so it was safe for him to talk.
Hey, you...
Oh. Yeah, Nogales?
That car that just drove up. I think that's Mr. Kilcourse.
All right.
Hey, what's your hurry?
Let me go! Let me go!
Come on, what's your hurry?
Tommy's out there in that cab. I've got to warn him.
Or tip off Kilcourse. Which is it?
No, Sam, you've got to believe me.
Sit down. Stop that.
You two have fun. I'm getting out of here.
Go ahead. Now, listen, sweet Lorraine. You may as well save your breath for those explanations. You're staying right here until the cape is all wrapped up.
Here he comes. Have you got a gun, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, you'd better have it ready.
Mm-mm.
But, Sam...
Where's Nogales? I want to see him.
He was called out of town, sir. I'm in charge. You Mr. Kilcourse?
That's right. I want to know why you people have been interfering with my business. It might interest you to know that this building site's on an old Spanish land grant. Title's very shaky. I'll run an 8-lane highway straight through the middle of it and turn the rest of it into a game preserve. That's what I do to people who double-cross me.
I tried to tell Mr. Nogales that, sir. He wouldn't listen to me. He tipped Tommy off for a split of 100 grand, but I knew sooner or later we'd have to answer to you, Mr. Kilcourse.
Oh, well, what's that?
Here's your 100 grand, sir. Count it.
Sam.
Well. What's your name, son?
Sam Spade, sir.
Well, I'm glad to meet an honest lad. Well, come along. You too, young lady. We'll all walk out together.
Sam,
shut
what
up,
are you...
Shut
what?
Spade, huh?
Yes, sir. I'm a private detective, but I'm ambitious.
Politics?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll run you for assembly. In the meantime, I believe there's an opening in one of the public services. Garbage disposal. Executive end, of course. Where the devil is that man with my car? Oh, there he is. Now, you drop around to my office in the morning.
Thank you, and good night, Mr. Kilcourse.
Drive on, Horace, back to the city.
Oh, Sam, how could you? All those lies and just handing over the money like that, it wasn't yours.
It wasn't Tommy's either, sweetheart. Get in.
Well, Tommy, are you all right?
Yeah.
Drive us across the bridge, Tommy, will you?
Yeah.
Tommy.
Yeah?
Tommy, I'm afraid we'll have to do without the money.
Yeah?
Sam gave it to Mr. Kilcourse.
Yeah?
Now, don't get excited, Tommy. I'm sure Sam had a reason. Didn't you, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, that was marked money from a payroll job.
Oh, then it won't do him any good.
It'll send him up for a good long stretch if the eyewitness story that goes along with it is good enough. And you're just the girl to tell it, sweetheart. Am I right, Tommy?
Yeah.
Period. End of report.
Already? But Sam.
Yeah?
What happened? Who were the five men in the car, the ones who shot at that Plymouth in the mistaken belief that you were in it?
Their names are of little account, Effie. Suffice it to say that Kilcourse pointed his pudgy finger at them in the hopes of keeping the charge of attempted murder out of his indictment. But I was too clever. I identified them.
But, Sam, you didn't see anything but their cigars glowing in the darkness.
Have you never heard of Sherlock Holmes' monograph on the 49 varieties of tobacco ash, you fool?
Oh, but, Sam, Sherlock Holmes is only the segment of someone's imagination. He's a fictional detective.
Well?
You mean... Oh, Sam, you're tired.
Yes, I am.
It's affected your mind, winning all that money. Now, you just sit here and rest.
All right.
Think of the snowy mountaintops and blue skies. Mm-hmm. I'll just go and type this up.
Snowy mountaintops. Winter sports yet.
And now, listen to this. If you haven't yet tried Wild Root Cream Oil, the famous hair tonic that grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose dandruff, then here's a wonderful way to get acquainted. Buy Wild Root Cream Oil in the new 25-cent size bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Also, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. And not that it made any difference, but how did you guess that she wasn't Mrs. Kilcourse?
Simple. Kilcourse didn't recognize her.
But, Sam, that was after you denounced her.
I did no such thing.
From the report, Sam, in black and white. Quote, why did you tell me you were Kilcourse's wife, unquote. At that point, you assumed that she was not Mrs. Leonard Kilcourse.
I did not. I merely wondered why she had told me.
Well, with all the lies she told, you might have assumed anything she said was totally devoid of truth.
And I did, sweetheart. I did.
Oh, well, that's a relief. I was afraid for a while she'd taken you in.
What's that got to do with the truth?
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. Sadie Thompson appeared as Lorraine Kilcourse. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Score composed by Renee Garrigang. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to...
Get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie. Keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy.
Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.